This company's a product of Jeff Raikes.
So he's the kind of executive that has made Microsoft a great company.
I went to Stanford University under the encouragement of my father, who felt getting a business degree was more important than getting an agricultural degree. My family are farmers, and so that's the relevance of that advice. I got to Stanford. I found out they didn't have an undergraduate business school, so I ended up going into engineering. I was preparing myself to go work for the U.S. Department of Agriculture on agricultural policy, but I bought an Apple II computer to help my brother in running our family farm. And the next thing I knew, I went to work for Apple Computer coming out of Stanford in 1980. I was very lucky. I didn't have a degree in computer science. In fact, Stanford didn't have a degree in computer science at that time. Computer science was considered to be applied mathematics. I had taught myself how to program the Apple II computer, and Apple wanted me for my modeling background, the fact that I had worked with significant models with the intent to help on agricultural policy. So my first assignment was a product called VisiCalc. VisiCalc was the first electronic spreadsheet. And so I was very fortunate to be able to work with VisiCalc early in my career, and I learned two really important things while I was at Apple Computer. One is I learned I love software. When people would come to me with what they thought was the tough problem to solve with the spreadsheet, that maybe it couldn't be solved with the spreadsheet, I viewed that as a puzzle, and I would perhaps spend all night trying to figure out how to get VisiCalc to do what they wanted it to do. You come in the next morning, you demonstrate it to them, their eyes light up, and I was hooked. For me, that was the magic of software. The second important thing I learned at Apple Computer is if you really want to do great software, you got to do it at a software company. Hardware companies like Apple tend to think of software as just a way to sell their box. And I viewed software as really the whole purpose, the real value of what computing was about. I decided I was interested in moving to a software company. About that time, I got a phone call from Steve Ballmer. He invited me to lunch at a somewhat famous Silicon Valley spot called Chef Chew's. And we went to lunch, and I was intrigued by what he had to say about Microsoft, but wasn't really so sure that I wanted to move to the Northwest. I really enjoyed the Stanford University environment, Silicon Valley. But I had a sister who lived in Seattle. And so in August of 1981, I decided to take him up on his offer, and mostly because it was a free trip to see my sister. Wasn't all that serious about Microsoft, and I was working very hard at Apple Computer. In fact, I refused to come in on a weekday. I would only come in on a weekend for my interview, so it was a Saturday in August. 2 months later, in fact, November 13th, 1981, that was my first day at Microsoft. Well, Microsoft was a small company at the time, relatively speaking. It was a good-sized software company. When I joined, there were about 100 employees, and the annual revenue was about $12 million a year. But keep in mind, at that point in the history of the computer industry, hardware companies dominated companies like IBM, or even in personal computers. Apple Computer, I would say, was the dominant company. But I believed in software. And coming from Apple Computer, you have this sense that Apple is the only thing in the world. And so my eyes were really opened up to the fact that there were a lot of computer manufacturers out there. And Microsoft seemed to be doing software for every one of them. And so one of my key conclusions from that day of interviews in August of 1981 was that there were a lot of computer manufacturers out there. I didn't know which one was most likely to win. In fact, Steve Ballmer kept taking me by this little room, and he kept saying, "Well, I can't tell you what's in there. I can't tell you what's in there. I can't tell you what's in there." And of course, it wasn't that hard for me to figure out. It was the prototype of the IBM personal computer. And so, as I said, there were all of these computers. I didn't know exactly who was going to win in hardware, but it seemed like Microsoft was doing software for all of them. And so my conclusion was Microsoft had the best chance of being the winning software company. My excitement was always the application software, what we think of today as Microsoft Office. In fact, there was a brief moment when I, after I joined the company, Steve Ballmer was really creating the product marketing group. And in fact, the largest business for Microsoft at that time was Microsoft's hardware add-on business, in particular, a product called the Soft Card, which really meant software card, but it was called the Soft Card. And what it did was it took Apple computers and made it possible for them to run CPM-80 software. So it added a microprocessor and a CPM-80 operating system to the Apple computer, opening up the library of CPM-80 software for Apple users. So Steve thought for a minute, well, maybe since that's the biggest business, maybe I should work on that business. I said, oh, no, no, no. I came here for application software. I really joined Microsoft with the intent to build Microsoft Office. And so that was a very short conversation, and fortunately Steve lived up to his commitment, and I worked on building Microsoft Office. Bill really had the vision for creating application software. He saw very early on the importance of what VisiCalc was doing in the industry. Steve had more of the vision for creating the organization structure. So it was Steve who put in place the concept of product marketing, which is where I started at the company. It was Bill who put in place the concept of doing application software, or what they liked to call at the time, and it sort of shows our geekiness, end user tools. So actually, I started in what was called the end user tools. What Bill had come across, and I don't know exactly how, but Bill had met Charles Simone. Charles worked at Xerox PARC, Palo Alto Research Center, on a very, very innovative graphical word processor system called the Alto. It was really part of Charles' graduate work. He was working on his PhD, and I think it was called Bravo and Bravo X, but he was really trying to explore programmer productivity, but in the process, he created a graphic user interface word processor. And of course, Bill very early on latched on to the importance of graphic user interface, in particular because he had had the opportunity to see what was going on at Xerox Palo Alto Research Center, which is really where graphic user interface started. Apple Computer just borrowed the concepts of graphic user interface from Xerox PARC, as did Microsoft, frankly. So Bill got in touch with Charles. Charles joined Microsoft, I believe that was probably February of 1981, and that was part of a vision of creating these end-user tools. Now, in the summer of 1981, when I was working for Apple Computer, Apple had assigned me to a project to try and produce a product that was competitive with VisiCalc. Its code name was Mystery House. It turned out the CEO of Apple Computer at that time, Michael Scott, he was kind of angry with the people who published VisiCalc, so he wanted to put them out of business. And so my job was to be a part of a team to design a spreadsheet and build it to supplant VisiCalc. Because of that, I was invited to a meeting in July of 1981 where Microsoft was demonstrating to Apple Computer its electronic spreadsheet, codenamed Electronic Paper. So Charles Simone came down to Apple Computer with Bill Gates and some other folks and demonstrated Electronic Paper. And Apple kind of secretly had me come into the back of the room to see what was going on with Electronic Paper. Of course, the intrigue there is somewhat interesting because on the one hand, you could say Apple was having me spy on what Microsoft was doing. On the other hand, Ballmer had already contacted me about coming to join Microsoft. And so it was, let me say, an interesting period. I came to see that Bill was quite serious about creating a series of application products. And Electronic Paper was introduced at Fall Comdex in 1981. So I was the product manager, and so my first few days at Microsoft was to do the launch of this new product line of Office applications, and the first product was Multiplan.
Multiplan is the most advanced in the new generation of electronic worksheets. The most powerful tool you can use for budgeting, forecasting, cost analysis, and financial planning.
It ultimately shipped first in June of 1982 on a little-known computer called the DataPoint, and then later that month on the Mitsubishi Melco 16, and then on the Apple II computer in August of 1982. And so that period of months was really the kickoff to what we know today as Microsoft Office. Apple Computer started in about 1975. I joined in 1980 when there were about 750 employees, and I left in 1981 when there were about 2,250 employees. So as you can see, Apple was going through a high growth period. In addition, Apple had just gone public in December of 1980. So I got to see what this whole stock option, IPO, or initial public offering thing was all about very firsthand. And so, you know, there was the excitement of joining the company. I never thought I'd be an employee of a corporation, and now I'm at a corporation and I'm liking it. And then you have the IPO and there's a huge peak. And then not even 3 months later, 2 months later, in February of 81, there was what was called, I think it was Black Thursday, where Apple Computer decided to lay off a bunch of employees. And so, you know, for me as a somebody very early in my career, to kind of see the way in which companies were run and perhaps not so well managed and how the employees suffered as a part of that, it was an interesting experience. And I will say it soured my view of Apple Computer and was part of what caused me to think about considering other opportunities. And I was just, I think I had just taken on my first managerial assignment, and, you know, I was managing this employee named Jay, and the next thing I know, Jay is being laid off. So even though there were definitely those highs and lows, I would say that it gave me an opportunity to learn and to see things that would later shape my own thoughts about how you effectively lead an organization. Steve Jobs was, for a period of time, without portfolio. As I mentioned, Apple was going through a lot of changes. It was growing quite rapidly. And so when I had joined in June of 1980, Steve was the, I believe, the head of product marketing for Apple Computer. And then a few months later, in order to help cope with the growth, Apple was organized into divisions. There was the Apple II and III division, which was called PCSD, Personal Computer Systems Division. There was the Lisa division called POSD, Personal Office System. And there was no role for Steve Jobs. So Steve basically was out of a job. And I think that probably made him somewhat bitter. Steve latched on to a project that was kind of, I think you might think of it as a Skunk Works project, something kind of going on in the back room, led by a guy named Jeff Raskin. It was really Jeff Raskin who began the creation of the Apple Macintosh. Steve was kind of without portfolio, so he latched on to that project and started to build a team. And he had heard that I was very interested in creating application software. And of course, Steve wanted application software on the Macintosh. So Steve offered me a job to join the Macintosh team. At the time, I was really thinking I would probably leave. So I turned down Steve. Steve didn't like to be turned down, so I'm sure I was somewhat frustrating to him. And then a couple months later, on November 1st, 1981, I announced that I was going to leave Apple Computer to go to Microsoft. And about 2 o'clock that afternoon, I got a phone call. And it was from Steve. And I think he was obviously frustrated that I had turned down the job on the Macintosh, that I had decided to leave the company. I think he felt it was important for me to stay at Apple, in particular, come work on the Macintosh. And then he proceeded to explain to me how Microsoft was going to go out of business. Which, you know, is one of those things I'll always remember, that conversation. And the truth is, at the point in time, you know, I'm 23 years old. He might be right. It might go out of business. But on the other hand, I'm only 23 years old. And I kind of have the confidence that I can go and find another job if Microsoft goes out of business. And I kind of like the Northwest, and I wanted to give it a try, and so on and so forth. So that's how that all evolved. Well, Charles is a brilliant guy. He also has a great sense of humor. He's very, very thoughtful and a very big thinker. And I think one of the things that we were really blessed with is we had people like Charles who had a vision, really not so much about the application software as the tools to build the application software. And then we had people like Jeff Harbers, who was the director of development, and Jeff was a first-class engineer and an engineering leader. One of those people who really shaped the way in which we actually build the software. So you had Charles as somewhat of a thinker, and you had Jeff as somebody who could take those kinds of ideas and really make them practical. And so I really felt like I was working with a terrific engineering team. Charles, Jeff, Dave Moore, Bob Matthews, many other folks that really represented the early engineering enthusiasm for building great application software. So, in terms of competition in the application software business, let's start out with spreadsheets, because that was really what was defining application software in the early to mid-1980s. And, of course, VisiCalc had been introduced in the fall of 1979, and so that's what really kicked off the wave of using computers for office work or office applications. People didn't understand what a spreadsheet was, by the way, just as a reminder. I mean, that was just like a whole new concept. And Dan Bricklin and Bob Frankston deserve an incredible amount of credit for inventing a whole new genre of software. And you could say, to some extent, what the rest of us have been doing is just improving on that original genre. And so you'd say that they were the original competitor. We entered into the application software business with MultiPlan, and we wanted to be a competitor. The distinguishing thing that we were trying to do was we were trying to do MultiPlan on all of those personal computers. And in fact, I think at one point in time, MultiPlan was probably running on 60, 70, 80 different computers. And remember, this was before the concept of a clone, an IBM PC clone. These were just different designs. And so you had to adapt the software to all of these computers. And so I think the key element of our strategy in 1982 was the idea that we were going to have the ability to do MultiPlan on all of these different computers, and then also a word processor, a business graphics program, etc., and then do them all on these computers. It's what Charles Simony called the leverage of shared code, or the Simony revenue bomb. On my first day at Microsoft in 1981, we had a company meeting. Charles Simony introduced the audience. Again, the company is about 100 employees. Introduces the audience to the idea of the Simony revenue bomb. And it's this notion that once you build a product and you can share the code from that product to build your next product, and once you adapt that product to a machine and you can share that adaptation to other machines, you have this huge leverage in two dimensions. And the net result, assuming that revenue is proportional to new products on new machines, is an explosion of revenue. And so Charles did a very funny speech where he talked about how Microsoft was going to employ first 100 people, then it was going to be 10,000, then it was going to be the state of Washington, not because we'd need extra programmers, because we'd need sales people. So we entered into the application software business, and then on January 20th, 1983, from my perspective, the competitive world changed. And that was the day that Lotus Development shipped what is known as the 1-2-3 spreadsheet. And it was a very different strategy than ours. We were trying to do multi-plan on all of these machines. And Lotus just focused in on the IBM PC. They did the best spreadsheet on the IBM PC. There was no question that 1-2-3 was a better spreadsheet than multi-plan. But it only ran on the IBM PC initially, and then ultimately IBM PC clones. And so that was a real wake-up call for our strategy. It taught me a little bit about marketing and positioning. If you think about the difference between the IBM PC and the Apple II computer, the IBM PC had faster microprocessor, it had more RAM or memory, and it had higher resolution graphics. Those were the three differentiating features for the IBM PC and the Apple II. But remember, I'm a software guy. I don't think people really care if the computer is faster or more memory or higher resolution graphics unless you have software that takes advantage of it. Lotus 1-2-3 became the product that defined the IBM PC in the office environment. It was the differentiating feature. So that was a very important lesson to me about software strategy. And fortunately, even though I know Bill had been quite committed to this idea of doing our software on a wide range of computers, he was willing to adapt our strategy. And the beginning of that occurred just 2 weeks later. On February 1st, 1983, we kicked off a project called Microsoft Word. And Charles Simone had recruited a young programmer who had worked with him at Park named Richard Brody. And in less than 10 months, we had a word processor out there on the IBM PC, only on the IBM PC, that took advantage of the concept of a mouse, higher resolution graphics, on-screen italics and fonts and so on and so forth. We further shifted our strategy to better compete with Lotus and others in the spring of 1984. At that point in time, the Macintosh had been introduced to great fanfare. People were very excited. Since his visit to Xerox PARC, Bill had always believed in the importance of graphic user interface and how that would change the interaction between the computer and the individual. We decided to further focus our bet on graphical user interface applications.